Chapter 1. Never talk to strangers. Once, upon an unusually hot hour of sunset in spring, two gentlemen appeared at Patriarch's Ponds in Moscow. The first sported a grey summer suit and was short, plump, and bald. He carried his respectable fedora in his hand, and black, horn-rimmed spectacles of supernatural proportions adorned his clean-shaven face. The second, a broad-shouldered young man with curly reddish hair, wore a cowboy shirt, craggy white trousers, black trainers, and a checked cap cocked to the back of his head. The first was none other than Mikhail Alexandrovich Berlioz, chairman of the board of one of Moscow's largest literary organizations, known by the acronym Masolit, and editor of a thick literary journal. His young companion was the poet Ivan Nikolaevich Ponyarov, who wrote under the pen name of Homeless. Upon reaching the shade of the freshly budding lindens, the writers first dashed towards a brightly painted booth bearing the sign Beer and Sodas. By the way, it is worthwhile to note the first strange thing about that horrible May afternoon. Not a single human being was to be found in the vicinity of the booth, or indeed in the entire alley that ran parallel to Malaya Branaya Street. At an hour when it seemed almost impossible to breathe, no one sought shelter in the shade of the lindens. No one sat down on the benches.
"Mineral water," Berlioz requested.
"We don't have any," the woman in the booth replied, taking offence for some reason.
"Got beer?"
Homeless inquired hoarsely.
"Beer's coming later tonight," the woman replied.
"What do you have?" asked Berlioz.
"Apricot flavoured water. Only it's warm," said the woman.
"We'll take it, we'll take it."
After drinking their fill, the writers were immediately overcome with hiccups. They paid up and sat on a bench, facing the pond and away from Branaya. Then something else strange happened, this time to Berlioz alone. His hiccups stopped suddenly, and his heart thumped and seemed to vanish for a moment. When it resumed beating, it was as though a blunt point had lodged in it. What's more, Berlioz was suddenly overcome with fear.
"What's wrong with me? Heart's misbehaving. To hell with everything. It's time to take that Kislovodsk vacation."
And then the muggy air thickened before him and wove itself into a transparent gentleman of the strangest appearance. A tiny jockey cap on his tiny head, a short, checked, equally ethereal jacket on his shoulders. The gentleman was 7 feet tall, yet narrow-chested and incredibly thin, and with an insolent mouth, may I add. Berlioz's life had not prepared him well for unnatural phenomena. His eyes bulging, Berlioz paled even more and managed a single confused thought.
"This cannot be."
Alas, it was. The tall, transparent gentleman hovered before him, swaying left and right without touching the ground. By this point, Berlioz was so overcome with horror that he shut his eyes. When he opened them again, he saw that it was all over. The haze had dissolved, the checkered man had vanished, and so had the blunt point from his heart. He eventually calmed down, fanned himself with his handkerchief, and, managing a lively, "Well then," resumed the speech interrupted by the apricot water. The speech, as it was later determined, involved Jesus Christ. Apparently, the editor had commissioned the poet to write a long anti-religious poem for the next issue of the journal. Unfortunately, it completely failed to please the editor. Though Homeless had painted the protagonist, that is to say, Jesus, in the darkest of colours, his Jesus turned out to be a very lifelike, if unattractive, character. Berlioz, however, wanted to show the poet that the crux of the matter lay not in Jesus's nature, good or bad, but in the fact that Jesus, as a person, had never existed in the first place. It should be noted that the editor was a well-read man who supported his argument very skillfully with references to ancient historians. For instance, neither the famous Philo of Alexandria nor the brilliantly educated Josephus Flavius had mentioned so much as a word of Jesus' existence.
"There isn't a single Eastern religion," Berlioz was saying, that doesn't involve a virgin begetting a god. Failing to invent anything original, the Christians created their Jesus in an identical manner. Jesus, who never actually lived. That is precisely where the main emphasis should be. And just as Mikhail Alexandrovich ventured further and further into the sort of jungle where only a highly educated man can survive, the first man appeared in the alley. He wore an expensive grey suit. His grey beret was cocked brashly to one side, and a cane with a black handle shaped like a poodle's head was tucked under his arm. Looked to be 40-something. Dark hair. His right eye was black, the left green for some reason. Dark eyebrows, one set higher than the other. In short, a foreigner. Passing the bench where the editor and the poet were sitting, the foreigner gave them a sidelong glance, stopped, and suddenly sat down on the neighbouring bench, mere steps away from the two companions. A German, thought Berlioz. Englishman, thought Homeless. The foreigner looked over the tall buildings, forming a square around the pond. It was clear that he was seeing the place for the first time. He rested his gaze on the upper floors, their windows reflecting a fragmented image of the blinding sun that would soon leave Mikhail Alexandrovich forever. The foreigner chuckled at something contemptuously, then placed his hands atop his cane and his chin atop his hands. "For example, Ivan," Berlioz was saying, "you have very nicely and satirically portrayed the birth of Jesus, Son of God. But instead of writing of the nativity, you must describe the awkward rumours surrounding this birth. Otherwise, according to your narrative, it turns out that he was actually born." At this point, the foreigner stood up suddenly and headed towards the writers. They looked at him with surprise. "Please forgive me for taking the liberty. Since we are not acquainted, but the subject of your learned discussion is so interesting that..." Here he removed his beret politely. "May I sit?" the foreigner inquired politely, and the companions somehow involuntarily moved apart. The foreigner sat nimbly between them and immediately joined the conversation. "Unless I am mistaken, you had been saying that Jesus never existed." No, you are not mistaken," Berlioz replied. "Forgive my pestering, but as I understand, you don't believe in God either." He put on a frightened look and added, "I swear I won't tell anyone." "Yes, we do not believe in God." "Oh, how charming," cried the extraordinary foreigner. "But allow me to ask you, what would you do with the proofs of divine existence, of which, as it is known, there are exactly 5? "Alas," Berlioz replied regretfully, "not a single proof is worth a damn, and mankind has long since consigned them to the archives. After all, you must agree that no proof of God's existence can be found in the realm of reason."
"Bravo," cried the foreigner. "Bravo. You have fully restated the thoughts of the restless old Immanuel on this matter. But here's the embarrassing part. He fully demolished all 5 proofs and then, as if mocking himself, devised a 6th one of his own."
"Kant's proof," the educated editor retorted with a thin smile, "is equally unconvincing." Berlioz spoke and wondered silently, "But really, who is he? And how can he speak Russian so well?"
"They ought to give this Kant 3 years or so in Solovki for these proofs of his," Ivan Nikolaevich slammed quite unexpectedly. The idea of sending Kant to Solovki not only failed to surprise the foreigner, it absolutely delighted him.
"Precisely. That's just the place for him. Why, I told him back then at breakfast, 'Say what you will, Professor, but I think you've cooked up something incoherent. People will just laugh at you.'"
Berlioz's eyes bulged out. "At breakfast? To Kant? What's he blathering about?" he thought.
"However," the foreigner continued, "it's impossible to toss him into Solovki, if only for the reason that he has now spent over 100 years in a place significantly further away. a place whence she cannot be extracted by any means, I assure you.
Pity,
replied the belligerent poet. I pity it too, the stranger confirmed. But here's what bothers me. If there is no God, then may I ask, who governs man's existence and all world order?
Man himself governs it, Berlioz replied quickly and sternly.
I beg pardon, the stranger said softly. In order to govern, one needs to have a definite plan for some reasonable length of time. Allow me to ask you how man can govern anything, considering that not only is he unable to plan for even a laughably short period, say, 1,000 years, but that he cannot even vouch for tomorrow.
Here the stranger turned to Berlioz.
Indeed. Imagine that you, for instance, begin to govern and direct yourself and others, and suddenly you develop sarcoma of the lungs.
The stranger grinned sweetly, as if the thought of sarcoma of the lungs brought him much pleasure.
Your government is over. You are no longer interested in anyone's fate but your own. Everything ends quite tragically. One moment a man decides to visit Kislovodsk.
Here the foreigner narrowed his eyes at Berlioz.
Simplest thing in the world to do.
Except
he can't even accomplish that, because the next moment he slips and falls under a tram for some unknown reason. Certainly you don't suggest that he disposed of himself. Wouldn't it be more reasonable to think that someone else disposed of him?
Berlioz took in the unpleasant story about the sarcoma and the tram with the greatest attention, and disturbing thoughts began to gnaw at him.
He's no foreigner, thought Berlioz. Who is he? I should refute him thus. Yes, man is mortal, no one denies that, but the fact is that...
But before he could pronounce the words, the foreigner spoke.
Yes, man is mortal, but that's only half the trouble. The problem is that he is unexpectedly mortal. He can't even say what he'll be doing tonight.
What an awkward way to pose a question, mused Berlioz, and retorted, Well, that's an exaggeration. Tonight is more or less clear to me. Now, naturally, if a brick falls on my head on Brunner...
Let me assure you that you can feel completely safe in that regard. You will die a different death.
Perhaps you know which exactly, and could tell me,
Berlioz asked with understandable sarcasm.
Gladly, the stranger replied.
He looked over Berlioz as if he were fitting a suit.
You will be beheaded.
Grinning crookedly, Berlioz asked, And by whom exactly?
A Russian woman, a member of the Komsomol. Oh, yes, and I also wanted to ask what you were going to be doing tonight, unless it's a secret.
No secret. In a little while I'll drop by my place on Sedovaya, and then at 10 I'm going to chair a meeting at Masolit.
That cannot possibly be.
Why is that?
Because Anushka has already bought the sunflower oil. Not only bought it, in fact, but spilled it as well. So the meeting will not occur.
Quite understandably, this statement was met with silence.
Excuse me,
Berlioz began after a pause.
What does sunflower oil have to do with anything? And who is Anushka?
The sunflower oil has nothing to do with anything,
Holmes said abruptly.
Have you, sir, ever spent time in a mental institution?
The foreigner was not a bit insulted, and laughed heartily.
Of course I have. Is there a place I haven't been to?
Ivan Nikolaevich. How do you know my name?
Please, my dear Ivan Nikolaevich, who hasn't heard of you?
The foreigner produced yesterday's issue of the Literary Gazette from his pocket, and Ivan Nikolaevich recognized his own likeness on the front page, with his own poem immediately below.
Excuse me, he said with a sinister expression. Could you possibly wait here a minute? I'd like a couple of words with my companion.
Listen, Misha, the poet whispered, pulling Berlioz aside.
He's not a tourist. He's a spy. A Russian emigre who sneaked back into the country. Ask him for his papers, or he'll get away.
You think so? Berlioz whispered.
Come on, let's detain him or he'll escape.
The poet took Berlioz by the arm and pulled him towards the bench. The stranger no longer sat, but stood beside it, holding some sort of booklet in a dark grey binding, a thick envelope made of expensive paper, and a business card.
Forgive me, but in the heat of our debate, I completely forgot to introduce myself. This is my card, my passport, and my invitation to visit Moscow to provide consulting services.
The two became embarrassed and gestured politely that there was no need to check papers.
While the foreigner was thrusting them at the editor,
the poet had time to see the title Professor in foreign letters on the card. The foreigner returned the documents to his pocket. Relations thus re-established, all three sat back down on the bench.
"You were invited here as a consultant, Professor?"
asked Berlioz. "Yes, a consultant."
"What's your area of expertise?"
Berlioz inquired. "I specialize in black magic. The State Library here unearthed some authentic manuscripts of the necromancer Jaber of Aurillac, 10th century, and I am needed to help decipher them. I am the only specialist in the world on the subject."
The professor beckoned them both closer, and as they leaned towards him, he whispered,
"Keep in mind that Jesus did exist."
"But some sort of proof is required,"
Berlioz began.
"No proofs required,"
the professor replied, and began narrating quietly, his accent somehow disappearing.
"It's all quite simple. In a white cape."